This is Night Call, the first and only nationwide listener call-in show on vital issues. Tonight's subject, the problems of rehabilitation. Tonight's guest, ex-convict Kenny Jackson of the Fortune Society, a group of former prisoners devoted to prison and rehabilitation reform. You speak for yourself and ask your questions directly by calling Collect Night Call's national phone number, area code 212-749-3311, or in the New York area, 866-5010. Night Call's host in New York City is Del Shields.
Good evening. Would you let your daughter marry one? Would you like one to be your next-door neighbor? Would you hire one? These are not questions we're asking whites about blacks. These are questions we're asking blacks and whites about ex-convicts, which is what our show is all about tonight. The way we are preparing or not preparing our prison population to return to society and our society to receive them. Our guest tonight is Kenny Jackson. He served 4.5 years in 2 New York State penitentiaries, Elmira and Coxsackie, for grand larceny and malicious mischief. Mr. Jackson is a member and spokesman for a group called the Fortune Society. It was founded and is run by ex-convicts devoted to prison reform and to changing the way we try to rehabilitate ex-convicts into our society. Mr. Jackson is standing by in New York to answer your questions and share your comments and conversation about prison reform and prisoner rehabilitation. Tonight we're frankly experimenting with our phone numbers. We want to see if announcing them in our opening and in our breaks is enough for you to get them. If we don't have to constantly announce them in our show, we have that much more time for you to get your calls into Night Call. Mr. Jackson, good evening, sir.
Good evening, Bill.
And thank you for being with us.
My pleasure.
Mr. Jackson, what we're talking about really is just about 1% of our society, a present state and federal prison population of some 200,000 people convicted of crimes ranging from assault and arson to bank robberies, car theft, and rape. Mr. Jackson, are they really worth worrying about?
Well, I think the thing that's worth worrying about is that being that we have no rehabilitation facilities in our prisons, these people, these 200,000 that you spoke of, will someday be returning to society. And upon returning, society again will be the victim of a more experienced, more well-equipped criminal. So yes, I think they're worth worrying about.
In this country, television and the movies have glorified crime. It seems that the criminal is always the underdog, and in such mediums it has generated a great deal of sympathy. Does this mean that most Americans are inclined to feel that crime does pay?
Well, that's a hard thing. I would say that most Americans are of the opinion that everybody involved in crime is involved in the mafia-type crime, and this is the furthest thing from the truth. Most of your criminals don't know how to spell mafia and never mind be involved in it. Crime doesn't pay. It's a very cheap wage for the type of work you're doing.
Mr. Jackson, can you explain to us, or can you give us a kind of a brief definition of what is an ex-convict in today's society?
An ex-convict, he's about the lowest form of animal life walking on the face of this earth in the eyes of the average citizen.
Do you feel that way?
No, I don't.
Well, where's the difference? You say society feels that he's the lowest form of animal, and you don't agree.
Well, I don't agree not only because I am one, but because of my associations with many others. I feel the ex-convict is a person who's very misunderstood, who is like any other human being. He has feelings. He has frustrations. And society doesn't help these feelings or frustrations by their attitudes.
Right now in this, I'm going to call it hot political season, there's a great deal of discussion about law and order. Are we right in our interpretation that crime is on the rise?
Oh, very much so. Our parole statistics, as well as our political bigwigs, if you will, their statistics are very close to the truth that crime is on the rise. This is no news to nobody, I don't believe. But again, it reflects on our prison system. take, for instance, the parole system states 75% of the men who are coming out on parole will return to prison within 5 years. So you take these and combine them with the new offender, and yes, the crime is on the rise, quite rampant.
You say that 75% will return within a period of 5 years.
Right.
Now, I'm assuming then that there is something wrong or something is not taking place in the prisons where supposedly a man is imprisoned for the purpose of rehabilitation.
Yes, right.
Now, what happens in the prisons? Why or what is wrong with the system that we're not rehabilitating our men who are in prison for crimes?
Well, prison isn't set up to rehabilitate. It's set up to punish in every area. I mean, what prison mainly is to the individual who's doing the time is a day in the future when he'll appear before a board of men who can more or less resentence him, where a judge will give you a sentence of 5 years and you know you're eligible for parole within 20 months. This board can resentence you to another year, 2 years, or whatever the maximum expiration of your sentence may be. So your life centers around the day you're going to meet this particular board. And the rehabilitation that they say, the paper rehabilitation that they give to the public, is the furthest thing from the truth. There just is none.
Am I right in assuming that in this modern day and in this year of 1968, with all of the fine electronic marvels that we have been discovering and with our attempts to send man out of a space, that we haven't gotten around to actually coming up with a new approach to rehabilitating people who are in prison?
Well, I would say yes, you're right in assuming that. There's been definitely in the last 20, 30, 40 years, no change whatsoever. Our prison laws were last wrote in 1939, and they haven't changed at all since then, to my knowledge. So we're living, our prison conditions are under 1939 laws when we're living in 1968.
The newspapers and the television and radio, they're constantly filled with accounts of various disturbances that are taking place within the prisons, and we're led to believe that many of these disturbances that have taken place are due to various prisoners who feel that there is a need for reforms, and we are also led to believe that there are reforms taking place.
Well, this here, again, is what the newspapers unfortunately use to sell copy. That something is being done. In reality, what's being done is certain members of these so-called riotous groups in our different penal institutions are being fingered, they're being pointed out, and the only thing they get for their efforts to change what's going on in our penal system is solitary confinement anywhere from 3 months to 5 years, and sometimes they even go beyond that and give them new sentences. So, these riots are doing absolutely nothing for nobody.
Tonight on Night Call, we are discussing reform and prisoner rehabilitation. Our guest tonight is a representative and a spokesman for the Fortune Society, Mr. Kenny Jackson. And our national telephone number is area code 212-749-3311. That's area code 212-749-3311. And remember, we always welcome your telephone calls, collect, as well as your comments and your conversation. And our local telephone number in New York is 866-5010. That's 866-5010. Mr. Jackson, is there discrimination being displayed or being practiced in our New York State prisons?
Very definitely, yes.
In what way, sir?
Well, in just about every way you could possibly think of, and some you couldn't. Just to touch on things that I'd like to stay mainly in the younger area of the younger offender going into prison, the one who's so-called able to be reached yet. He's not the hardened criminal yet. So what he's taught in prisons such as Caxsackie, where I was sent, is...
Could you give us an age limit first when you talk about younger so that we can...
Well, this is the 16 to 21-year-old offender.
Right.
Mainly the first offender that's sent to this particular institution. And in there, the racial prejudice is something else. For instance, the fountains in the yard are set up so that... a black man can't drink out of a white man's fountain and vice versa. jobs appointed, the better jobs are appointed to the white man. The Negro never even comes into consideration for them. I know certain jobs such as farm runner, front hall man, census office, hospital, truck drivers, the so-called good jobs in the institution, to my knowledge, have never and probably won't be for quite a while in the future given to a Negro.
And you're saying that in this year of 1968, that if a young black is in prison and he goes to a place like Coxsackie, that he is forced to drink from separate fountains?
Oh, not only separate fountains. If he happens to work on a squad where there's white inmates, he's also forced to drink from a separate water can. And then it gets worse as you go into areas of lines and what have you, property areas in the yard where a Negro is only allowed a certain amount of space in the yard to move around in, where he couldn't possibly even entertain the idea of walking across the yard where the white fellas stand, because this automatically brings on a fight.
Is this a ruling of the prison, or is this a ruling of the inmates?
Well, the people in authority would like the public to believe that it's an inmate thing, and I guess it is in a sense. However, the inmates don't do the requisitioning when it comes to water fountains and what have you, or place them where they're placed. This is done by the authority, and it's done so that they can have this here.
Mr. Jackson, we'll take our first call tonight from Brooklyn, New York. Mr. Norman Lewis is hearing night call over WLIB-FM. Mr. Lewis, good evening, sir.
Good evening.
How are you?
All right, I'm glad to have you back.
Thank you.
I was listening to Mr. Jackson, and I have one main question in view of the headlines in the past that we've been reading, well, just in the past couple of weeks anyway. And the question is simply this. It seems to me that the police, by their actions in arrests and in handling what they feel are violators of the law, are more determined to teach them a lesson in the respect that if you don't go according to this or that code, I'm going to beat your brains out with this stick. And and the impression was really brought home during the convention week in the Democratic convention. Now, my question to Mr. Jackson would be, do you think that they are actually accomplishing this act of teaching them a lesson, in quotation marks, in the truest sense of the word, or do they just sort of compound the problem, let's say, by batting even a criminal, for that matter, for someone who breaks the law in the head with a stick or working them over at the station or something like this? Do you think they actually accomplish their purpose in the sense that they're teaching them a lesson or what?
No, I think what they've done is, in the Chicago incident, they finally showed their true colors. I think anybody who takes a job in any capacity where a police officer, this is a parasite as far as I'm concerned, and anybody who lives on the problems of other people and shows the hostility that the police in Chicago showed during the convention, as far as I'm concerned, it speaks for itself. And they're not doing nothing to prevent lawlessness. If anything, they're making other people so hostile towards them now that they've set themselves back 50 years.
Well, may I ask you this question, Mr. Jackson? Now, I happen to agree with your point of view in the sense that you can't teach, let's say, a grown man a lesson by hitting him with a stick. But on the other hand, I would say, myself, having been in the service, and I was in the military police, I was in the air police, in the Air Force, and I think in terms of coming across a situation whereas you might see a youngster walking down the street, let's say, and he has a satchel full of marijuana.
Right.
Which in and of itself, to my mind anyway, is not a great evil, but he has a satchel full of marijuana and he's going to take it to someone else for a price.
Right.
Now, as he's walking down the street, a patrolman observes him walking down the street, and suddenly he drops the satchel, and somehow it opens, and he notices that there's that stuff in there. Now, he goes over to make the apprehension. let's say, or let's say he goes over to investigate to find out what that is. And suppose as he goes over, you know, he has to contend with the young fellow. The young fellow might pull out a, let's say, a knife, or he might try to resist or something like this. You know, exactly how do you think a situation such as that should be handled? Or in any other similar situation, you know, where something that...
Well, you're talking in a sense of self-preservation now. Any human being whose life is in jeopardy, of course, is going to react with force, I imagine. I know I would.
Yeah.
However, I don't think you react with force when it's not necessary.
I see. So in a case such as I've mentioned, then you would probably go over and say, young fellow, you know, you have no business with that. Give me that and come with me. Would that, or would you say, would you snatch the goods, collar him, and try to walk away with it? Or if he put up a struggle, I mean, you know, at what point do you get to the place where you sort of go all out to beat him up good rather than subdue him?
Well, I think when life and limb come in jeopardy, then you got to do what your job calls for. However, I don't think you do this here before it gets to this point.
Yeah.
Mr. Lewis, thank you for calling.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Bill.
This is NyCall in New York. We'll return to our guest, Mr. Kenneth Jackson, right after station identification. Stay tuned for the NyCall Network.
More NyCall with Del Shields and guest Kenny Jackson after station identification. In our city and state and all across the United States, people are talking about trouble, black and white trouble. Some call it racial tension or see poverty as the real problem, or say law and order has given way to anarchy in our streets. Most people agree at least that there is a crisis, and we are a people with many unanswered questions. This station believes you deserve to ask your own questions and get some answers, or at least opinions, from people who should know what they're talking about. So we bring you Night Call, the new nationwide listener call-in show where you ask your questions and express your opinions to leaders such as John Lindsay, Ralph Abernathy, John Gardner, Stokely Carmichael, and Sergeant Shriver. Night Call, the new nationwide radio forum on important issues facing you and the rest of the nation. Night Call, each weeknight. Speak for yourself, collect on Night Call. Area code 212-749-3311 or 866-5010 to ex-convict Kenny Jackson about the problems of rehabilitation. Again, Del Shields.
And we return to our Night Call guest tonight, where we are discussing and talking with Mr. Kenneth Jackson about prison reform and rehabilitation, and we'll take our next call from Mobile, Alabama. Mrs. Dito is hearing Night Call over WKRG. Mrs.
Yes.
Dito, welcome.
Who is this, Mr. Shields?
Yes, it is.
I'm saying that during the first part of the program, Mr. Jackson says that the penal laws have not been changed since 1939, but does he figure, how does he calculate here that it is any easier? That why should people be treated any easier when they disobey the laws and break the laws? I mean, and increase the crime. Why should they not be punished? If I am going down the street, I do not run a red light because I would endanger other people's lives. I would also be disobeying or breaking a law.
Well,
how do we figure this?
First, the question is, or what we were discussing.
I cannot hear you.
Our discussion is about the rehabilitation of prisoners. Now, he wasn't trying to qualify that prisoners should not be punished. I think what we're discussing is what happens to a person who does break the law, and after they are in prison, what happens to them following that? Are you with me?
Yes.
Well, does that help you to does that help your question in any way?
Well,
if you turn down your radio, I can hear your radio. If you turn it down, I think you'd be able to hear me a little bit clearer.
Yes. But I don't think that you can treat people just particularly good. I don't think you can reward or subsidize evil.
Well, I'm going to let Mr. Jackson answer, but may I say this to you? There are 30 million first offenders in this country. 30 million.
Right.
That's quite a figure in our country. Now, there must be a reason why these people have become involved with the law. Now, what we are discussing is what happens to a person after they have broken a law and after they've been in prison. Now, when you think in terms of 30 million people being first offenders in America, and when you also think in terms that 75% of people who are in prison return to prison within 5 years after, there has to be a problem. Now, we're not talking about reward. We're talking about if a person does make a mistake, if a person does make an error, if a person does break a law, what is to happen to this person after the person is in prison? Mr. Jackson, would you like to respond to that?
Well, I'd be in accord with what you said and the Fortune Society, and I think I speak for the whole society when I say we're not against incarcerating a man who committed a crime. Right now, it's the lesser of two evils. What the other evil may be, I don't know. However, if a man is incarcerated, I think the main thing they should do is do something about his attitudes and his sense of values, and they don't. They allow his sense of values and his attitudes to get so distorted that he's not ready for society, and society's not ready for him, and something has to be done about it, because I have a family of my own, and I don't want guys coming out of jail, living next door to me, with distorted senses of values and attitudes.
Well, I think that this comes from your own environment. I mean, I think that if perhaps if you had children who with whom you could not speak and with whom you could not communicate, possibly they would take up these attitudes that maybe this next door neighbor or something, as it were. But how could someone living next door cause your own child, who has had time, hour after hour, spent saying, this is right, this is wrong? Or how are the people just becoming so belligerent that they don't listen, that they have no sense of value to begin with?
Well, one how I'll try to give you is that when a man goes into a prison, he's told, we'll just take in a case. We'll take my case. I was told that when I come out, what was I intending to do for a livelihood? I told them I'd like to be a truck driver and work in my father's business.
Yes.
So they made me a truck driver.
Yes.
Now, I've been out on the streets for 8 years. Mm-hmm. I was paroled 8 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
In 8 years, it took the Department of Motor Vehicles exactly 7 years and 11 months to find out that I was capable of driving, and I was given a driver's license.
Mm-hmm.
To go to work for the job that 13 years ago they started me out to learn so that I would have a job when I come out.
Yeah,
now, in those 7 years and 11 months, many times I said, what is the sense? What is the use? And I didn't care what the people next door thought. There was many times when I wanted to quit on myself. Fortunately, I met people who helped me not quit on myself. But there's a lot of men going around today with these hostilities pent up inside, and when they explode, it has a lot to do with what they've learned in prison. And it's a distortion of values, a distortion of attitudes, and mainly quitting on themselves because they have no incentive to go any further.
Are there not organizations set up, or is this possibly a solution that for instance, Alcoholics Anonymous, you know,
right.
There's a band there. There's someone who has something in common. There was this man who was, I read his book, out, he was a convict himself. So who am I speaking of?
Bill Sands.
Sir?
Bill Sands.
He has done much to, as I understand, to definitely rehabilitate himself and possibly other people too. As I understand it, he's working. But are there not organizations or bands of people, groups who can help?
Well, that's what we're in the process of trying to do. We're we've more or less set ourselves up along the lines of Alcoholics Anonymous in that we feel, as ex-offenders, we would be more capable than most to deal with ex-offenders and to prevent our younger generation from becoming ex-offenders.
I mean, because this man was just absolutely remarkable. Now, you can't expect every convict who comes out to make the progress that he made or to do the good. And a lot of times it takes knowing all connections or something with people who have heart. But also, I mean, I'm wondering about the organizations the possibility of organizations.
Well, I don't know about Mr. Sands, but we're talking to Mr. Jackson, who is a member of the Fortune Society. And he is not only a member, but a spokesman for them. And one of their purposes is to create a greater public awareness of the prison system in America today. And Mr. Jackson spends a great deal of time in talking with youth throughout the city of New York and telling them about the problems of being in prison and trying to advise them against it. And he is trying to make us aware what some of the problems are.
Seems so it could be set up, I mean, not just necessarily in New York, but possibly statewise. I mean,
we'd love it, you know.
Well, there has to be a start. There has to be a start.
Mr.
Jackson, are people who are not ex-offenders, are they welcomed to become members of the Fortune Society?
Oh, yes, the major portion of our
organization. Oh, I should think that if you can't reach down and lift someone up, then you're no good to society yourself. You may as well be in the way I feel about it.
Well, Mrs. Dito, I'm going to suggest to you that you write to the Fortune Society at 50. I'm going to suggest to you that you write to the Fortune Society at 1545 Broadway, right here in New York, and they'll be more than happy. 1545 Broadway.
1545
Broadway. Right, New York. The zip code is 10036. You write to them, they'll be more than happy to give you information.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for calling.
Thanks for the plug, though.
This is Night Calling New York. Tonight we're talking with Ken Jackson, and we're discussing prison reform and rehabilitation. Our telephone number is again area code 212-749-3311. And our New York telephone number is 866-5010. Remember, you're always welcome to call collect. We'll take our next call from Louisville, Kentucky. Mr. Evans is hearing Night Call over WLRS. Mr. Evans, good evening, sir.
How are you, sir?
Fine, thank you.
Is this Mr. Jackson?
This is Mr. Jackson, yes. Good evening.
Mr. Jackson, you stated a minute ago on the trouble in Chicago, and you feel that the police there were parasites and that they handled the situation very badly. I might ask you a question. What would have happened at the Hotel Hilton if these demonstrators hadn't been stopped? And had it ever...
Mr. Evans, I want to be fair to our guest. Mr. Jackson gave a kind of a personal, not kind of, but he did give a personal opinion of what he felt the Chicago demonstrations were. But tonight we're discussing prison reform and rehabilitation. And I don't think that it's fair for us to put our guest on the spot to ask his opinion, because in the first place, throughout the country, there's a great deal of controversy about Mayor Daley and what took place in Chicago. But Mr. Jackson is not an authority. He only gave a personal opinion. I think we owe him...
Jackson has a personal opinion on what would
happen. Yeah, but you're asking me to give you a hypothetical case. I couldn't tell you what I think would have happened if somebody had got to the Hotel Hilton. I don't know if anybody was even heading in the direction of the Hotel Hilton. I only know that I seen the police headed in the direction of the park with bats going at all times.
Did you know there were 50 policemen injured in that rout as well as the demonstrators?
I know there were three.
I don't think really that question is relevant to what we are discussing tonight.
It is relevant to criminals. And
well, the question is whether or not then we can go on to another hypothetical situation. Are you going to call the young people who were there, you're going to call them criminals? You know, then we got to go into degrees of criminality. But our discussion tonight, sir, is prison reform and rehabilitation. This is what we're discussing tonight. Now, if you'd like to address your question in that area, I'll be more than happy to welcome you. All right?
No, I wanted him to state his personal opinion on this. What would have happened if this these demonstrators has reached the Hilton Hotel.
Well, I'd rather that he not. I would rather that he would not respond to that. Mayor Daley has already asked for time. From the networks, he has turned it down. NBC offered him an hour. He turned it down, and I understand that CBS and ABC have not offered him time, but he has the time for it. Thank you so much for calling, sir. This is Night Call in New York. We'll return to our guest, Mr. Kenneth Jackson, right after station identification. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Kenny Jackson after station identification. Next week on Night Call, improving human awareness, black leadership, saving our society, broadcasting in the second American Revolution, and how children learn. Monday, joy, dynamic movement or phony fad. A look at the new human potential movement with psychologist William Schutz of the Esalen Institute at Big Sur, California. Tuesday, Roy Innes of the Congress for Racial Equality on Has Core Gone Tom. Wednesday, Leon Modeste asks for your suggestions on how black people should spend some of the Episcopalian Church's $9 million they're devoting to locally controlled ghetto projects. Thursday, FCC Commissioner Nicholas Johnson on racial equality, hiring and programming practices. And Friday, author John Holt on how children learn. All this next week on Night Call. Speak for yourself, collect on Night Call. Area code 212-749-3311 or 866-5010 to ex-convict Kenny Jackson about the problems of rehabilitation. Again, Del Shields.
And we welcome the Night Call stations who join us for the second half hour each night here in New York and, of course, across the country. And tonight our guest is Mr. Kenneth Jackson, a member of the Fortune Society and a spokesman for that group, who is interested in creating a greater public awareness of the prison system here in America. Just prior to station identification, we had a listener, and nothing grieves me more than to have to cut a listener off. In fact, I think I've been accused of being a little bit more than polite to most of our listeners, but I kind of think of our Night Call listeners and our Night Call audience as a big, happy family of people who are seeking information, and it's always difficult when you have a 60-minute show to try to keep all of the questions in a particular area. Now, tonight we're discussing prison reforms, and Mr. Jackson has kindly consented to be our guest tonight, and this is what we want to discuss. There are times, and of course, in a discussion when we may offer personal opinions, but Mr. Jackson is not an authority on what took place in Chicago. We all have opinions on that, I would assume. But the important thing, I think, is that we are discussing what happens to a man after he is arrested, after he is booked, after he is sentenced, and after he is sentenced to prison. And I think that we should give serious consideration to this, because the statistics have proven that 75% of people who are incarcerated return to prison within a period of 5 years. So something has to be wrong with the system. And this is what we're discussing now. We are not condoning crime in any way. We're not saying that criminals should be treated with kid gloves. We're merely saying that if a man commits a crime and if he is incarcerated, what is to happen to him? What is to happen to his dignity? What is to happen to him as a human being? Are we actually rehabilitating criminals? And this is what our discussion is tonight. We'll take our next call from Flint, Michigan. Mr. Hedrick is hearing Night Call over WMRP-FM. Mr. Hedrick, good evening, sir.
Good evening. I'd like to ask Mr. Jackson if what ethnic group, the largest percentage of an ethnic group that's in the prisons today?
I wouldn't be able to answer that. I have no statistics on that.
Could you answer for New York?
No, I wouldn't be able to give you any answer. Every institution in New York, the 11 major prisons, vary in ethnic group population.
Well, do they come mainly out of the slum areas?
I wouldn't be able to answer that either. I imagine they would, yes, but I really couldn't tell you.
But in a lot of cases, don't you think, or do you think, that the prison life is a lot better than their home life?
Oh, there's the time in prison that you weren't arrested, you were rescued, and this here is true in a lot of cases, yes.
Uh-huh. Well, that was my question, sir.
Thank you for calling, sir.
All right.
Mr. Jackson, I'd like a little qualification. Is it possible that a man can be better off in prison where he has doors closed on him and he has to walk around in an area of maybe 6 by 8 or 9 by 12?
Yes, getting back to the subject of rehabilitation in this area, you have men who have so inwardly quit on themselves and become institutionalized to the point where they can exist under these conditions. Unfortunately, these men are what, like the walking dead. But yes, there is a small portion of the population of our prison system that do exist under these conditions.
We'll take our next call from Detroit, Michigan. Mr. Nissen, I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly, is hearing night call over WJLB. Mr. Nissen?
Yes.
Good evening, sir. Your question.
Good evening, Mr. Jackson. I'd like to talk to you about your subject, which is rehabilitation. Now, are you referring to prisoners that come out of the federal prison system or all felons?
I'm mainly talking about our state prison system, although our federal prison system isn't too much above our state system.
I see. Now, your organization that you're talking about is essentially a self-help group, is it?
It's, well, I think our main purpose is to inform the public of what's going on in our penal institutions and also to motivate a man towards staying out of prison to get the dignity that the title of ex-convict takes away from him and regain his self-respect.
I see. So you're dealing directly with the ex-prisoners?
No, we're dealing mainly with the public.
Oh, mainly with the public.
Right. Our organization is, right now, the number is 1,300 members. Out of those 1,300 members, 1,000 of them have never been arrested.
Oh. I see. So the core group is the people who have been arrested, and then you have others who are just from the general public.
Right. And I think our really main interest is to try and, in the area of prevention, to try and show the youth that prison is no life. Crime is no life.
Well, now, what do you think would be the kind of things that people could do to deal with this problem?
You could start giving ex-convicts jobs, for one thing. You could start treating them even as doormats instead of wall-to-wall cops. A lot of the little, you know, the small things. It's no big thing. It's a lot of small things that most people take for granted, like letting an ex-con be able to go take a loan instead of having a wife or a relative take it for him, or opening a business without a wife or a relative having to sign as the owner of that particular business, buying a car, anything, you name it, the ex-con isn't entitled to it because he made a mistake.
How do you react to the parole system as we have it today?
As we have it today, my only reaction to it is that it's very badly in need of reevaluation.
Do you feel that people would be, those who would like to be interested in this problem and active, would they be well advised to try to reform the parole system itself? Or
I think that would be a very good area to start in. But I think the biggest problem is for the man to come out and be able to gain employment.
Now,
Mr. Jackson, can we talk about employment for just a moment? If a man is in prison,
right,
and he is facing parole,
right,
generally I'm assuming now, correct me if I'm wrong, that when the parole when he's about to go on parole, that he can get out if he has a job.
Yes, that's one of the stipulations, right, to parole, a home
now,
and a job.
How does he get a job in prison?
He's allowed to write job letters to any corporation he wants to. Or if he has a family outside who will try to gain employment for him.
Now, since most people, or since most employers, will not hire an ex-convict, and since most families are generally, I'm assuming now, correct me again if I'm wrong, that if they have someone who's in prison, they are not too willing to let people know that they have someone who is in prison. This kind of cuts down or reduces his chances for a job, doesn't it?
Oh, very much so. The average man appearing before a parole board who's granted parole, I'd say better than 50%, have no job, and they're given what is known as an open date. date or a 6 or earlier, where if at the time their date opens, say the board sets December the 12th as the date they can go home on if they have an approved job, when their date opens, 50% or better don't have an approved job. That's another area. They not only have to have a job, but the job has to be approved by the parole, the Board of Parole.
Well, you mentioned earlier that you had been trained to become a truck driver.
That's right.
And upon your release, did you have a job waiting for you?
Yes, but not as a truck driver. I couldn't take a job as a truck driver.
Because you couldn't get a license?
Right.
Well, why would they train you to become a truck driver if you couldn't get a license?
Well, we can go even deeper into that. They trained many men. When you go into a prison, you're given a choice of what type of job you'd like to get. Now, what they neglect to inform you is that, we'll say, for instance, as a barber, they'll tell you if you get 1,000 hours in the barbershop and you're staying in the institution, you qualify to get a certificate certifying you as a barber. What they neglect to tell you is that, I don't know about other states, but in New York State, an ex-convict can't get a license as a barber. And this goes into many areas. We've put millions and millions of dollars in New York into conservation camps so that the younger offender doesn't have to go behind the walls with the hardened criminal. And we've trained them in every possible area of conservation. And these men are released from prison, and then they're informed that the only place in New York you can work in conservation is for the state, and the state won't hire you if you're an ex-convict. So there's many things that are going on that are of no use to nobody.
Mr. Nissen?
Yes, well, look, I think this is the kind of conversation that is most useful, and I could ask many questions in this regard, and I know that there are many people who would be concerned about this, and all I could say is bravo for what you're trying to do. There ought to be a lot more people who are working and concerned in this area. Now, I do know that professional people, like probation and parole people, are much concerned. And this is just a further example of the problem that we have of the lack of knowledge, the lack of representation of people who are actually helpless and required to do things that those who are able to assist themselves can do, like obtain a job or get a driver's license, as you're saying. All I can say is keep repeating your address, your phone number, and what people can.
Thank you so much for calling, sir.
One thing I'd like to touch on that the man mentioned, that's in the area of probation and parole. We were amazed when we started out. We never expected to get a response from probation and parole, but we did, and it was a beautiful response because these men who are working in these jobs as parole officers, probation officers, and what have you, really want to do the job that they're getting paid for. But unfortunately, the appropriation money-wise, the salary we're paying these men, we're not getting the qualified men anymore. They're going into other fields of industry because it's better pay.
By the way, I might just mention something that is being tried in Detroit and has been tried elsewhere, and that is to hire ex-convicts to work in the probation and parole system itself with probationers and parolees.
This is being tried now?
Well, this is a suggestion that has been put forth by one of our recorder's court judges, which has met a lot of opposition, but I think has a great deal of merit, because you know the feeling is that that the parolee or the probationer, the man who has had the problem, understands it better than anyone else and can deal with a person with that kind of problem better than anyone else.
Very true.
Sounds like civil rights.
Very true.
Thank you for calling, sir.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much. This is Night Call in New York. Our guest tonight, Mr. Kenneth Jackson of the Fortune Society. We are discussing prison reform and rehabilitation, and we have calls standing by from Nashville, Tennessee, as well as New York, and we'll return to those calls right after station identification. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Kenny Jackson after station identification. Tomorrow night on Night Call, The Secret Search for Peace in Vietnam. A controversial new book by Los Angeles Times Washington staffers David Kraslow and Stuart Lurie is our subject, and they are our guests. The New York Times Book Review says of The Secret Search for Peace in Vietnam, it answers a question that many Americans have been asking with anguish and disbelief. How is it possible for our leaders, honorable men, with all the information they need, to get us into such a terrible mess as this wretched war in Vietnam? The book gives a depressing answer. It is not only possible, it is almost inevitable, given the present complexities and secrecy surrounding war and peace decisions. The Secret Search for Peace in Vietnam, with authors David Kraslow and Stuart Lurie, tomorrow night on Night Call. Speak for yourself, collect on Night Call. Area code 212-749-3311 or 866-5010 to ex-convict Kenny Jackson about the problems of rehabilitation. Again, Del Shields.
And this time we go to Nashville, Tennessee. Mr. Burton is hearing Night Call of WVOL. Mr. Burton, good evening, sir.
How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Mr. Jackson.
Yes.
I have a question concerning rehabilitation. You spoke of the high recidivism rate earlier. Once a prisoner is committed, do you feel that in order to rehabilitate the prisoner, if the needs are clearly defined and some program is set up accordingly to meet his needs, that this would assist in the rehabilitatory process?
Very definitely, yes. I also think that one of the major faults of the prison structure as it now is that it's staffed by the wrong people. I believe, as many people have said, that a person who goes to the point where he has to be incarcerated definitely has something wrong with him. It's some sickness, if you like. And if I know if I'm sick, I'm going to go to a doctor. But unfortunately, in prison, we don't have doctors. We have shoemakers and barbers and hacks. Doctors are in a minority. Psychiatry is next to nothing.
Well, unless these areas are upgraded that you just mentioned, do you see any decline or any leveling off point as far as the return rate is concerned?
No. There's so many areas, both inside and outside, that point out that it can't possibly go down. It has to go even higher. Just to get back where I had touched briefly on parole on the outside, the parole caseloads are so large that it's almost humanly impossible for a parole officer to deal with an individual. They're so understaffed, there's no way they can cut their caseloads in half. It's almost a relief for a parole officer to violate a guy because it gives them, if a guy looks like he's going to return to crime, they almost instantly violate them so that they can deal with the ones who look like they're going to stay out. And it's very unfortunate, and it's something that has to be dealt with if we want the crime rate to go down.
Oh, yes. One other question. Now, the young offender, usually this will differ from state to state, but his stay at an institution is usually 4 to 6 months if he is a first offender. And many times, with the heavy and enormous caseloads that a counselor will have, there isn't adequate time to determine his needs, and after these needs are determined, establish and set up some program whereby that he will be able to better cope with the community and accept responsibility once he is released. So many times, during his tenure at the institution, he will work toward and try to be a model individual working toward the release date, but once his behavior has become adequate as far as the institution is concerned for that particular time, then the concern is not for this individual. The emphasis seemingly is placed on the person who is causing the most problem at the particular time, and the man who possibly really has a deep-seated problem has conformed to the release date, and by and large, the rehabilitation process is slacking off in a sense just because of his good behavior, because he's looking toward the release date.
Well, see, that word rehabilitation is a nice word that's kicked around quite often, but I think Judge Leibowitz said it best when he made this statement. But
I see.
Thank you for calling, sir. Thank you so much. This is Night Call in New York, area code 212-749-3311. That's area code 212-749-3311. Remember, you may call us collect and talk to Mr. Kenneth Jackson of the Fortune Society, as tonight we are discussing prison reform and rehabilitation. Our local telephone number in New York is 866-5010. Our next caller is coming in from Indianapolis, Indiana. Mrs. Bowie is hearing Night Call over WTLC. Mrs. Bowie, good evening.
Yes, Mr. Jackson?
Yes, ma'am.
I like to say, don't you think that if people accepted, I don't say ex-convicts because a lot of them really aren't. Don't you think if they accepted people that had been to penal institutions as people more or less as freaks, that this would kind of solve some of their problems? Because we don't accept them.
No.
It's like some people feel because they don't have a record, they need a pat on the back. And really they don't. This is just a way of living. But the people that do have a record, they need more of a pat on the back to help them along.
Yes, if you want to keep that record to a minimum, I think it would be a step in the right direction to give them a helping hand.
Well, even if they have been more than once, this is showing that there is something lacking, and they're the ones that really need particularly help.
Well, I had a man tell me not too long ago that I had a great future behind me, and I believe this. I believe this is the case with most ex-convicts. Their future is behind them, mainly due to the way society reacts to that title. And a lot of this has to do with the power of the press. And, see, you read a story in a paper which sells papers with a heading of ex-convict does this or that, and quite naturally you think that it's some kind of freak or animal, and it's not. What the story neglects to tell you that this man may have been out for anywhere from 5, 10, 15 years.
Yeah, I know.
And trying his best, and society is always slamming doors in his face, and finally he gets to the point where it's just a case of quitting on himself because society has long ago quit on him.
Now, this address that you gave at 1545 Broadway.
That's correct, 1545 Broadway in New York City. Mm-hmm. And our phone number, if anybody would care to call us, is 265-5644.
Well, now, if you could find jobs for people that were locked up, and how would you go about helping the person? That you can't just go to the state farm here in Indiana and say, well, I've found people that will hire these people. They don't really want you to come through this way.
Right. Unfortunately, we've run into this here, and what we have done is we get a lot of men calling or coming into our office who are looking for employment. We're not set up as an employment agency. Fortunately, we have run into many people who have been willing to hire ex-convicts, and we're able to tell a man that such and such an organization would be willing to interview you for a job. But we can't take a job letter that comes in, which we get many from our various institutions, begging, pleading for jobs so these men can come out and try to start over in life. We can't write in a job to them because we don't have jobs, and unfortunately, the majority of employees want to interview the employer face-to-face before they'll hire them.
Mrs. Bowie, thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Mr. Lanning is hearing Night Call in Richmond, Virginia, and he's listening to Night Call over WTVR. Mr. Lanning, good evening, sir.
Good evening. I was listening earlier in the program, and I heard a lady from Alabama talking about environment. I think it's one of the main problems. See, I've been in one time myself. And I think environment is one of the main problems there is in rehabilitating a man. And as for babying a prisoner, just being in a prison is a punishment enough. And the rules that are laid down, do this and do that this way and that way, the man is punished.
Did you return after you were released, sir?
No, I didn't.
What did you feel of the rehabilitation process of the prison you were in?
Well, I was in one of the federal institutions, and I can't say much about the state. But the federal, they're set up for very much vocational training. But I don't think it does a lot of good because most people coming out don't go to the kind of work that they are trained for anyway because they can't find work in the field that they take training for while in the institution.
Did you have problems of living down the fact that, I'm, for lack of another word, now correct me, I'm going to say ex-con, but as an ex-inmate, did you have problems?
No, I didn't personally. So much, there's some effects to it still yet, but as far as getting a job, I didn't because I was a tradesman when I went there, and when I came out, I still had people that I had worked for and had a good reputation with and good return to. That's myself, but I know that's not true for the majority of people returning to society.
Mr. Jackson, what is your response?
Well, I'm very glad to hear that men didn't have to go back, and insofar as jobs, 75% of them are automatically out. Only the most menial jobs, unless you have a family who owns a business or something, are open. Ex-convicts, as far as rehabilitation in any prison system, there is none. It's as simple as that. It's cut and dry. There just is none. We send people away. We have in New York State statutes on the books for felony offenders, first offenders, juveniles, where we send them on the way away, which timed a Zip 5 bid, which is a so-called rehabilitation bid, which is a farce. There's no such thing as rehabilitation in the New York system or in any other system that I've ever come in contact with.
Mr. Lanning, thank you so much for calling, sir. Right. Time has run out on us. Thank you. I'm sorry that we are unable to take any more calls. Our guest tonight, Mr. Kenneth Jackson of the Fortune Society, and we're going to give him about 35 seconds to kind of give us a wrap-up. But in the meantime, we are still asking you that if you find it kind of difficult to get through to us because of our busy phone lines, remember that we always welcome your letters, and you can always feel free to drop us a note or a letter to Night Call Pomona. That's P-O-M-O-N-A, New York, zip code 10970. That's Night Call, Pomona, New York, zip code 10970. Mr. Jackson, we've talked on many aspects of rehabilitation. We didn't get into all of the areas that we hoped that we would have been able to get into tonight. You are soliciting new members and additional members to the Fortune Society at 1545 Broadway in New York, zip code 10036, and the telephone number is 265-5644. Is there anything else that we can do to help the Fortune Society?
Well, we're also soliciting speaking engagements. We'll speak anywhere at any time to any group that will have us.
Will you speak before schools? Schools?
Yes. Any place.
Right. Mr. Jackson, we want to thank you so much for being with us.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Tonight, we have been discussing prison rehabilitation and prison reform. Our guest tonight has been Mr. Kenneth Jackson of the Fortune Society. This is Del Shields in New York. Good night and peace.
Night Call, the first and only nationwide listener call-in show on vital issues. Tomorrow night, same time, same station, The Secret Search for Peace in Vietnam with authors David Kraslow and Stuart Lurie. Listen tomorrow night. Discuss freely and responsibly your own personal opinions. Speak for yourself on Night Call. Produced by the United Methodist Church, presented with National Council of Churches, National Catholic Office for Radio and Television, American Jewish Committee, and Urban Coalition. We'll be right back.